The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I am on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. Sit back and enjoy the military transition hot washes and after action reports of your fellow veterans. You may just learn some lessons that smooth your own transition path.
That's one reason why I'm out here, you know, posting, publishing my take on things and the struggles I went through. And maybe this is that purpose that I'm looking for to help out as many transitioning service members as I can. So I can kind of coach, because everybody's focused on the job, getting the job. You're going to get a job. It's going to happen for you. The other things are the things that you need to really be worrying about: your mental health, your physical health, how you're assimilating, and influences around you, making sure that positive. And those are, I put those before the job 100% if I was laying out a curriculum.
On today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, I am welcoming Mark Brock. Mark retired from the United States Army after achieving the Command Sergeant Major rank. He went right into a skill bridge position and then landed a great role as a senior business partner with GE Appliances. He vowed that he would wait 2 years before he started to offer military transition advice. But once he crossed that timeline, he released his top lessons, which were so good and so important that I knew I had to have him on the show to share his thoughts with you. I think you're really going to enjoy Mark's no BS, real talk about the struggles he went through over the last 2 years and figure out that it really wasn't about getting a job as much as it was all the stuff inside your head and the things you have to figure out to assimilate and thrive in your post-military career. So stick around to the last two lessons, because that is a message that I want you all to hear. Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I'm excited to talk to you about your list today.
No, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about it as well. And I really appreciate you having me on.
So we always start with the military transition story. And we talked a little bit. You told me you went from 22 years in the Army to a skill bridge opportunity to a permanent role in a different department. Tell me a little bit about how that all happened.
When I made the decision to retire, I was in the Pacific Northwest in Olympia, Washington at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And we had made a decision to retire in Louisville, Kentucky, which is close to my wife's family in Elizabethtown, Fort Knox area. I knew from past successes of my colleagues that getting into a skill bridge program and getting my foot in the door in some corporate environment would be quite beneficial, because one of my goals was to not be a DoD contractor or work for the government. I wanted to go into the civilian sector 100%. So I did some research and I found the USA Cares actually manages the part of the skill bridge program at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and they call it the Senior Leader Corporate Fellowship Program. And they're tied in with a bunch of large companies here in the Louisville area. And I reached out to the CEO, Trace Chester, at the time. They still Trace Chester. And immediately he hits me back up on LinkedIn. He's like, hey, let's get moving, man. Send me all your stuff. So I sent him my resume, and we had this whole dialogue going on for months. Then I finally moved my family. I bought my house completely online. First time I saw it was the day I was closing on it. And we got, man, we nailed it. Got a pool and everything. So I should come back, get my family pseudo settled in, go back to Washington to move all the stuff. And then my last 2 months. And then I finally rejoined them. That is when we started doing the more getting depth of getting the process done, talking to Trace. And he said, hey, you know, I'm thinking you'll be a good fit for GE Appliances. I said, great. No worries. Didn't hear nothing for about a week. And then a gentleman had, I was watching LinkedIn, and somebody from GE Appliances had viewed my profile. So I just shot him a DM like, hey, you know, looking to move in the area, just wanted to connect. And he calls me back and is like, hey, we're doing interviews on Monday. The problem was that was on a week prior. So the week after that, I said, oh man, I got to fly to Washington State to do my final week in the military to out process and drive my car all the way over. He said, well, you know, it's okay. If you can't make the interview, we'll figure something out. I'm like, no, I'll be there. So me and my wife laid out this whole plan. I said, okay, I'm going to get in my car. I'm going to have to make this drive from the Pacific Northwest in 2.5 days. And I said, if my car breaks down or whatever, we had a backpack with a suit, everything in it, my pitches, my notes and all that. And I said, where I'm going to fly in, and it might be last minute, you pick me up at the airport and I'm going to be changing there. We're going to go. So luckily I made the drive. I made the 36 hour drive in 2.5 days.
Wow!
And I rolled right. I got in on a Sunday at 5 PM and I walked into the interview the very next day at 7:30. And they said, hey, yeah, we would like to bring you in on the fellowship. And it was with the manufacturing, one of the lean teams, because I had my Lean Six Sigma certification at the time. And they thought that would be the best fit for me.
I think you changed departments, though, right? So you did that, your skill bridge in that department. Tell me how it came about that you were able to switch departments.
I'm sitting there and, you know, about 3 weeks in, I'm not feeling the manufacturing role. I did manufacturing as a teen, and it was a lot of, quite frankly, it was a lot of on your feet moving around and stuff like that. And I just didn't really was filling it out. So I said, you know, I gotta start networking. I gotta start meeting some people. I got 4 weeks left. I gotta find something that I really want to do here, because I don't want to force myself into a position that I don't want to do. And I had saved up enough money where I didn't have to work for 2 years if I didn't want to. So I really was focused on nailing the right role. I was on their internal website. Director of security made a post about appreciating veterans. And I said, well, let me shoot her a note, see if I can set up some time with my daughter who wants to go into law enforcement. So we go there, and it was kind of funny because I'm wearing like, I'm not looking like I'm trying to like get a job or nothing. Like, I'm off the manufacturing floor. I got jeans. I got a really busted up polo. I got the earplugs hanging, the glasses on. I sit down, and her name's Lindsay Taylor. She's just a great, great boss. So we just start talking, and she's like, hey, you know, you got some really good energy. And I'm like, and you know, I said, hey, you do too. I'm really glad you had the time for it. And she's like, well, did you know I have a role on my team? And I told her, I said, I did not. And I promise you, that's not why I set this up. Because I didn't want her to think that I was just kind of like sliding in there. So she said, no. I think you'd be a good fit. I said, okay. And she kind of explained to me what the role consisted of. And I was like, yeah. And I told her, I can do all that. I can do everything that you're asking me to do. And it seems like, you know, it's going to be a dynamic day every single day. She said, okay, if you want it, look over it, submit the application, and we'll go from there. So I submitted the application that afternoon. By the next day, I had all my interviews set up, to include with the vice president of HR. I went through a good vetting process. Within a week, she made the offer, and I accepted it. I really liked the team. I didn't care about, I accepted before I even knew what the salary was. She said, hey, we're going to bring you on board. I said, yes, let's do this, because it just felt right. You know, it just felt like this is kind of what I want to do. And again, I didn't need to do it because I was set financially. I wasn't really worried about it. I knew I was going to find a job doing something. That's never was never too much of a concern of mine, a little bit, but not much. Just felt right. And that's why I hopped on it.
And so you bring up a really good point in that when you're in your skill bridge, you've got to start networking within the company to find the right place for you. I mean, I think, you know, SkillBridge is a great time for them to get a sense of who you are and you to get a sense of what the job is and what the company culture is. And if you want to stay there, start networking so that everybody knows who you are, because it's not a guarantee that you're going to have a position offered to you at the end of your SkillBridge. So you've got to keep working on that networking, keep working on building those relationships while you're in the role, correct?
Most definitely. So, I mean, and the corporation where I work at, it's vast, and there, you name it, you can do it there, right? From lawyer, software designer, putting together appliances. But I think what's really important is because I'm coming out of the military, I haven't been a civilian over 22 and a half years. I don't know what I don't know. So I need to, you know, what your project manager here, what does that mean? Because everybody wants to become a project manager when they leave the military. They want to get their PMP and they put project manager on LinkedIn. And that's what everybody wants to do. Well, when you talk to them, you're kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that after all. So then you kind of like, let me go look at this other role. And then you can find like, I have one fellow, she just recently landed a role and very, very similar to what she did in the military. We were just kind of looking around. I said, hey, I think this might be good for you. You should look at it. And she got excited about it. She went and did some networking and she put an application and she ended up getting hired for it too. But if I wouldn't go out there and venture and network, I would have never have gotten this opportunity. And I think more importantly, say I didn't land where I landed, you never know what that network's going to do for you in terms of, well, hey, we don't have nothing here, but I know somebody looking for somebody there. And I mean, it's just, it takes a network. And if you got it, you can leverage it.
I said it earlier in your bio, but you told me, like, I made a decision that I didn't want to offer any transition advice for at least 2 years. And so tell me kind of why you came up with that and why did you make that decision?
I just saw so much bad advice out there that I haven't transitioned yet, but I'm like, you know, you would hear a bunch of conjecture and tribal lore and then just a little bit of research and you're like, oh, no, that's not quite right. And one thing that would always frustrate me would be the individual who transitioned from the military and then 3 days later, they're working as an advisor at the transition center. And I'm like, you know, what kind of experience do you have to offer? And, you know, you listen to them, but then you would go talk to someone like yourself or a hiring manager. And it was a completely different type of vibe and a different kind of outlook and stuff. And I said, you know what, before I give any type of advice, I want to make sure I'm giving good, sound, solid advice. I need to go through and have these experiences and be able to talk through them and how I overcame them. And you're not going to be able to do that in 2 months.
I'll tell you, like, one of your very first pieces of advice is, as I mentioned earlier, kind of what caused me to reach out to you, because I thought it was a really solid list of lessons. And, you know, really what you found out is it wasn't as much focused on looking for a job and gaining employment as it was about just, like you said, in your head stuff, right? So you told me a little bit about some of your struggles in your first few months out of the military and like what made those first few months more difficult for you, do you think?
One, it didn't help that, a month after I got out that we fell right into a COVID pandemic. Actually, you know, you go from, man, I can't wait to do my own thing to now I'm being, you know, you're wearing a mask and stuff and you can't go, you can't go to certain places and whatever. Especially during when they were having lockdowns and stuff, you're like, ah, I'm free, but I'm not free. You know, you get a little frustrated. But I had always said, I don't want to be in charge of nobody. I just want to come in and do my job, right? But like most veterans, we're B+ alpha mentalities. And when, especially myself, who was, you know, a very senior ranking individual, you know, I want to be in charge and I had the mindset of when the COVID pandemic was happening in our organization was trying to figure out how to move forward with it. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm getting frustrated because, like, why are they not talking to me? Why don't they do what I tell them to do? I can handle crisis. I can. And, you know, looking back on it, I'm like talking to executives, you know, in tones that, you know, like, you know, it could be, I would probably disrespectful to be, you know, talking to an executive like that. Now that I look back on it, you know, thank goodness my boss kind of saved me from myself. But a lot of times she was like, all right, let's go. And, you know, then I kind of started figuring things out. Thank goodness no one ever took my advice. I had no clue what I was doing in the corporate sector. I didn't know how the organization functioned. I just didn't know. I mean, I really was struggling through that, and it was tough. I was kind of lost, literally. Like, I couldn't figure out which way to go, what to do, and stuff. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to be I need to get over my ego and be this individual contributor I want to be. And I kind of got into that role. We were setting up, we got a big project, and I said, I'm just going to offer whatever I can offer. And slowly I just started kind of building some credibility with everyone. And then I was in a place where I could actually have conversations and offer ideas, and sometimes they would be accepted and sometimes they would not. And I would always learn from those messages and all. And that wasn't it. I mean, I still went into some more struggles a few months in. And, you know, my boss kind of called me in and was like, hey, you know, we got to figure this out. And I said, yeah, you're right. And I told him, hey, this is all me. This is not the team. I'm working through this. I promise it's not going to be an issue. I wasn't getting like a negative. She was just worried about
me. Yeah.
One of the saving things when we brought a teammate on, as I was coming out of my second, like, downward spiral, I'll call it, for lack of a better term. And it wasn't like a downward spiral, like you see where, you know, I'm like laying on the bathroom floor, nothing like that. It was just, you know, like, I was like,
just struggling a little. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just kind of struggling, and there were a lot of other things going on too. I had torn my meniscus in my knee, so I couldn't exercise. They couldn't do surgeries. I started putting on the post-military weight because I couldn't exercise like I wanted to. So all that stuff just started kind of building up. A retired firefighter joined the team, and, you know, right off the bat, we hit it off pretty good. Same type of personalities. We're really great friends now. But then he starts going through some of the struggles that I was going through. And I said, well, man, I can help him out. I said, dude, here's what's going to happen. This, and this, and here's how we'll get through it, man. And, you know, just staying positive with him. And he's already a positive person. So not just kind of like bring him in a group and just being negative all the time. We would just get positive, make jokes about the situations and stuff like that. And then all the hurdles I had ran into in assimilating with the culture there, I was able to kind of guide him through that and help him avoid some of those pitfalls.
So it was almost like your mentorship of him helped you to learn the same lessons you were teaching him at the same time, right?
Yeah, 100%. And he taught me a lot of good things too. Because I mean, as a firefighter, he was always in the community and stuff. So he was kind of bridging that gap for me as well. And he just brought a really great dynamic to our team. And I'll tell you, I've been good ever since. Like, I've just been content in my role. I just been driving forward.
I think sometimes you have to settle in, right? I don't know if you move into a new house and you're like, I can't find anything, or where do I put stuff? But, you know, I just think it's a new situation and you just got to take the time to settle in. So, okay, I want to go through your list. I'm just going to read them out. We're going to read them. I'll read out what you wrote as he wrote it. So these are his words, not mine, everybody. And then we'll talk about it. Okay. So you're number one. You say, get over yourself. Employers call BS on that flowery resume that depicts all your scope and responsibility as a senior leader. Tailor the resume for the position and be reasonable in your achievements. Tell us what you mean.
You know, we'll put stuff on our resume like responsible for, you know, $3.6 billion worth of equipment and this. And when a civilian employer is going to look at that and like, okay, whatever, no. And then some of your scope of responsibility and sphere of influence is just so vast, it can be intimidating. And they're like, you know, I don't want to mess with this individual because they're just going to come in and they're going to have expectations that we can't fulfill. So, you know, my piece of transition advice is figure out what you want to do. And then once you find something that a role that's available to you, make your resume fit that role and make sure your talking points fit that role too. If it requires 5 years of experience, you know, put 7 years down. You don't need to put 22 years of dynamic leadership leading for 1,000 people. You know, just make it fit to what they're looking for. And because at the end of the day, it's all about a good fit. The good fit is what makes the good team, and good teams is what where productivity comes from. And that, you know, get over yourself and it's okay. It's okay.
You don't have to tell them everything you've ever done in your career, do you?
No. And you're at a point, especially as you're fixing to get out, that you can't articulate what you've done to them because you just don't know. You don't understand the dialogue. You don't understand the vernacular. You know none of that. You know, it's like when I say, well, what'd you do in the military? Well, I was a brigade command sergeant major, just that they don't know what none of that means. So you can't tell them who you were, but what you did. And that's what I tell people. So not who you were, what did you do? Well, I was a leader in an organization where we managed aviation assets and, you know, parts and supply chains and this, that, whatever you did, right? Mm-hmm. You just kind of keep it into simple terms. But that ego, well, you know, I was a lieutenant colonel and a battalion commander of 500 people. You already lost them. They don't have no clue. Yeah. Okay. Right.
And I would add to that, like, what did you do and how did you add value? Like, I would add that one as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because then you can translate how you can add value to them. And again, that's what they're looking for. I agree 100%.
Number two, civilians do not understand the military structure or lingo. We just talked about it a little bit, right? But to them, a Corps Command Sergeant Major is the same as a Corps Armorer. I mean, honestly, an armorer in Corps probably works harder than the Command Sergeant Major anyway. His words, remember that.
So, you know, if you're thinking about myself as a Command Sergeant Major, it's a lot of advising people on what to do, right? That really doesn't exist from what I see too much in the civilian world, unless you're like a consultant and you're working for a consulting firm. You know, the CEO doesn't have a right-hand person that's advising them on the hourly population or the salary population or anything like that. So you're reading that and you're like, oh, I don't understand none of this. But, you know, someone who does repairs on machinery, you put that in front of them, that's going to make more sense to, you know, someone in a manufacturing, I'll use manufacturing environment because that's what I'm in now. So, okay, this person works on things. He knows how to repair. He knows how to do maintenance. I mean, and that's where getting over your ego and understanding like, hey, you know, I got to make my resume and I got to be able to speak to what they want and how my experiences translate. And I got to be able to translate it into their language. It all goes back to that ego, getting over yourself. You're not a big dog no more. Nobody's laughing at your jokes.
So I think you simplify it and you clarify it, right? So make it easy for them to understand. And, you know, kind of going back to what you said about, you know, the armorer works harder, right, than the CSM. I just heard a story the other day. I just want to reshare it here. I had I think it was an E8, retired E8, in an interview. He worked for a company and had a retired O6 come in and interview for a position. And in his interview answers, he was part of the panel. So in the interview answers, the O6 was saying, you know, well, we did this and my team did this and here's what the group achieved. And one of the interviewers stopped him and said, hey, we'd really like to know what you did. Well, I advised, I led them. But what did you accomplish? And they kept pushing. Like, we want to know what you accomplished because we're not interviewing your team for this role. We're interviewing you. And you've really got to be able to step back and say, okay, here's how I added value to that team. Here's what I did, the actionable steps that I took to help achieve those goals. And I think that's a big deal. because I think that, like you said, that high level, like I led teams, I advised, I strategized, is, you know, that's probably not the role or the level at which you're going to be going into the corporate world, right?
You know, you serve in everything about the team in the military. You always want to highlight the hardworking people that work with you. I don't like to say work under you, or, you know, your team, right? You know, whenever somebody's giving you credit in the military, it's always, hey, it ain't me, it's these people behind me that make it happen. In the civilian sector, you kind of got to be, a little selfish. I don't know if selfish is the right word, but you got to go in there and sell yourself on what you can do. And that's very challenging. It was very hard for me to say, I did this, I accomplished this, I created this. It's not easy for us to do. And it you can have kind of like some interpersonal conflict going on with that. You know, it's like you're just trying to sort it out. And that's the difference between the civilian sector and the military.
And, you know, I think it's not necessarily being selfish. It's not being braggadocious, right? It's just a matter of saying, like, here's what I accomplished. It's okay to talk about being part of a team or leading a team, but if you weren't there, what would have happened? So, like, what ideas did you bring to the table? What special skills or knowledge or did you bring to the table so that you can talk about what you, who is interviewing for the job, accomplished, right?
Yeah, you got to sell yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number three, you say find a couple of hobbies to challenge yourself both physically and mentally that you'll have fun doing. So you started Brazilian jiu-jitsu and started learning how to play the guitar. You only ran twice in all of 2021. So you're like, I'm done with running, right? I know you hurt your knee too, so... How important were your hobbies to you?
The Brazilian jiu-jitsu was, I think it was one of the things that really helped me get through it all, because it's a sport of humility. And you walk in there and, you know, you're a former senior leader in the military with a special operations background. You think you're the baddest guy in the gym, and you're sitting at 210 and this person who weighs 150 pounds just balls you up, spits you out. And it is... So, male or female, it doesn't matter. And you walk out of there with an appreciation of humility. And, you know, that was very helpful, because, you know, you walk in there and, you know, you want to let out some, you know, some aggression. You want to get a workout in, you want to get the endorphins pumping. And, you know, one minute you can be very successful, and then the second somebody's just, you know, depends on who calls you out. If it's the black belt or a higher level belt, then you're just going to be bad for you. And so I was doing that, and that gave me the confidence to pick up the guitar, which I'm glad that came afterwards, because jiu-jitsu showed me how to break stuff when I usually break a guitar, because it's so frustrating. It's harder than the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I tell you what. So
really? Okay.
I got two sitting right over here. I just kind of like stare at them.
We might have to have a little, you know, serenade in a bit. So I might have to pull that out.
No. Yeah, break those phones. Yeah, not yet. I'm supposed to play at a couple of weddings, and I don't think I'm going to be able to make it.
So number four, you say, thanks to social media, it's easier to maintain friendships. Camaraderie will be found at your new job, gym, or neighborhood. You will assimilate.
Yeah, and that's one thing after the 2 years of positive message. I just try to spread as many people. It will happen as long as you let, you know, don't be, if you stay sheltered and don't get out there, then of course. But, you know, the same communities that we found in the military, they exist in the civilian sector. And you're going to find your niche, and you're going to find your crews, and you're going to find the people that you can get along with and laugh. And you're going to start adding Facebook friends who've never been in the military. And additionally, all your friends who are in the military, they're just a post away or a direct message away. And before this thing started, a great friend of mine was texting me about PMP stuff. And, you know, it was me and him staying in communication all the time. I ain't seen him in 4 or 5 years.
And I think you have to be open to it, right? You have to be open to building a new group of people and be open to assimilating and not see it as like a us and them, right? Military and civilians type of thing.
You know, we like to think that we got the patent on leadership and team building and all that. But, you know, the truth is we kind of don't. It's kind of a mix. I mean, most of the time we're reading civilians who write books on leadership and team building, and we bring them in and they talk to us about it. So that's one thing you got to get over to. You got to get over, say, you know, there are some great leaders in the civilian sector. There are some great teammates in the civilian sector. And it's just having that open mind and letting it happen. Just let it, just let the assimilation happen.
So I would say that number five is pretty self-evident, but it says catch up with lost family time. You rode hard for years. Now it's time to put them first.
I mean, I get to come home at a decent time every single day. I get to see my kids off to school. Sometimes I get to see them coming in. I'm teaching my daughter how to drive now. There's no periods of absence where, you know, I'll teach her for 1 week and then I'm gone for 3 months, or I'm gone for 6 months, or gone for a 9 month deployment, then come back and she's already had her first wreck, you know, or something like that. Thank goodness I was home during the COVID pandemic. I couldn't imagine if I was not here during then. But that was some difficult times for everybody. It's just good to know that, you know, I think about, man, I don't have to deploy. I don't have to worry about have the PCS and uproot my entire family, or doing the geographical bachelor thing where I go live somewhere for 2 years and they stay there because they're stable. It's just a relief.
Yeah, that's nice. It's good. I think it's something that you and your family deserve after the time that you all put in to serve in the country. And, you know, I feel like spouses and family members serve right alongside of you. So I like number six. I think this is a really important one. It says, don't do anything you don't want to do. What do you mean by that?
I alluded to it earlier. In 2015, when I kind of mapped out when I was going to leave the military with the timelines and the obligations I would pick up, worst case scenario. I talked to my wife and I said, okay, hey, we'll start putting money away. I want to have the flexibility. You know, I had it where when I wasn't going to do what I want to do. Like I said, this manufacturing thing on the floor, it really isn't my jam. I'm going to have to go try to find something else. If someone tells me to do something I don't want to do, I actually have an option now. I can't just be made to do it. I mean, obviously there's some things that may have consequences to that. So you got to obviously weigh it out. But unlike the military where, you know, I'm not going to get sent to prison for it, you know, I can do what I want to do, relatively speaking.
You know, you can leave if you don't want to do it, right?
Yeah, if you're not happy with your job, if I'm not happy where I want to live because it's going to be 60 degrees today and tomorrow, Thursday, it's going to be 7, I can just find a job, move to Florida if I want to, on my own accord, on my own timeline. Obviously, all that has planning. There's a lot of things to go into that. But if I wanted to, I could. And if I could make it happen, I could.
So number seven, which looks like you have embraced this one, it says grow your hair, grow a beard, pierce your ears, do whatever you want within the limits of your chosen profession.
I love not having to shave every single day. I got a great barber who keeps my beard looking good. I've always wanted to get a full sleeve tattoo, but I mean, those things take time to do. They take a lot of planning and, you know, in the military, you know, you make your appointments a year out, and I just didn't have the predictability. So I'm working on a full sleeve tattoo. Got 3 sessions on that done now. Something I always wanted to do. It means a lot to me. A lot of things that I got incorporated means a lot to me. And I haven't sold my wife on the earrings yet, but I'm not giving up.
So. Keep working on her.
But with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I really, it's not too functional.
Yeah, that might hurt a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It would probably hurt and get infected when it's healing. So yeah. I settled for those matted looking ears instead. I said, I'll just do those.
Just growing your ear hair out, getting crazy.
That's right.
Okay. But the great news is you're free to do it. Like, there's no reason not to try new things, right? So, like, my friend Marina has blue hair, you know, so there's nothing wrong with it. Like, do fun things. I think blue could actually look good on you.
Yeah. I mean, I was growing my hair out during the pandemic. You know, you couldn't get it cut. So, the earlier stages of it. So, it was growing out. I'm like, So, I mean, I just kind of settled for just a little bit longer than I had in the military on the sides. And a little bit longer on top, and I'm kind of happy with it.
I think we talked a little bit about number eight earlier, but you say take your health seriously. You are in worse shape than you realize, and it will come out when you retire.
I talked about my meniscus tear. I did that while I was on terminal leave, and that was a lot. It took 7 months to get that treated because of the insurance changeovers and COVID. But when I finally got in there for the MRIs, everything was a lot worse than what, and I'm not taking anything away from the military doctors. It's just, I don't know whatever it was, but the imaging from the ortho showed things a lot worse than they really were. You're going to not exercise. Nobody's making you get up at 5:30 in the morning to go work out in 4 degrees or nothing like that. Or there's nobody pulling a tape around you to make sure your body fat. So that's going to create some, there's reports out there of diabetes, type 2 diabetes from all the weight that people gain. I've put 15 pounds on since I got out. And I'm actually on this health regimen now to get everything under control. I've gotten all my cholesterols, HDL, all that stuff is like fabulous right now, just because of a focused effort to get there. I know a lot of people who they just start going down that downward spiral, and they just kind of start falling apart because, one, you're not fighting through it anymore, right? And now you're starting to really feel it more. And you're getting a little older too. So you're a lot of it comes out when you're going through the disability process. I didn't know my feet hurt. I got flat feet. I didn't know I had flat feet. Well, I didn't when I joined, and then the things that come with that. So you got to take your health serious. Just plan that you're probably going to put some weight on. So counter it as much as possible. Try to stay active. Don't run from a scale. Get on it. These are all things I wish I would have done when I initially got out. And it's almost 19, 20, 21, 20, almost 2.5, 3 years now that I'm like, okay, let's get everything under control.
And I think also going along with that is like, don't just feel like, well, I'm just going to have to live with it. Maybe, you report it, you deal with the disability part of it, and you see if you can get it fixed instead of just saying, it's just something I got to deal with, right?
Some of the good news things are I can exercise the way I want to and not the way the military wanted me to. So I can focus on areas I want to improve. I can work around injuries and stuff because nobody's telling me to put a rucksack on and go walk 12 miles in 3 hours. I don't have to do that. So I can actually do things, actually get in better shape. I can do yoga for a week and not have to worry about going to run. Like I said, I didn't 2021, I ran 2 times. And I found other ways to do cardio. So yeah, there's definitely benefits to being able to have your own regimen. The key is to have your own regimen.
And know that, like you said, as you get older, things change. It's just the way it is, right?
So. They certainly change.
So we've got 9 and 10 here, but these were not written by you, correct? So tell me about these two that got added.
Yeah, so I posted these on Facebook, and one of my former chief of staffs that I worked with, he added both of them on there. And I believe it was number 9. That was one that is actually in my mind right now. And it really was resonating with me. I didn't really know how to put it into words yet. And I was very appreciative that because he's very, very articulate. Chris Morton, I'm going to give him a shout. Very articulate, super intelligent guy. And it was about purpose. I believe number 9 was talking about, find your sense of purpose. So there are times where I'm like, okay, should I be doing something else? Should I be doing something for the community? Should I be teaching? Am I doing the right thing? Am I still living a fulfilled life? And so that's kind of a struggle that I'm going through right now. Am I getting everything out of it that I should be? Is there people that I could be helping? You listen to my wife say, you're good. Stop. It's in there, and it rears its head. And I won't say ugly head because it's a good thing, but it rears its head every now and then. So you having me on this actually kind of scratches that itch a little bit by being able to talk about these type of things. But I got to figure it out.
So I'm going to read 9 and 10 together because they're kind of interrelated. Okay. And these were added, like you said, by Chris Morton. So, number 9 says, unless you go into public service, such as law enforcement, healthcare, social work, etc., you will probably not do something as meaningful to society, meaningful in quotes, right, as military service. Be okay with making your meaning outside of your chosen profession, your faith, your family, your volunteer service, and your hobbies. This is okay. You've paid your debt to society many times over. And then he goes on to say, and since number 9 is true, relax. You're probably not saving babies every day. Most bad decisions in business cost people that have already made a couple of bucks. They'll be all right.
Yeah, that's what I said. I love that guy. He's so well-read, well-spoken, very articulate. And, you know, so I'm struggling with 9 and then I read number 10 and it kind of helps. It helped me out by reading my own rules that somebody added to it. You know, again, it's just something I struggle with. Like I said, I'm trying to be here for my family now. When I go to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, there's some younger guys there and younger practitioners there that, you know, they'll ask me for some advice and stuff. And I kind of end up talking to them. So I'm like the old man in there, you know, giving some advice every now and then. He nails it. He's absolutely right. It's exactly what I need to hear and one of the rules I need to follow. It's okay. It's okay for me to be who I am now.
And like you said, you paid that debt to society many times over, more than most non-veterans ever will pay. And you will make a difference in different ways. And that's okay. I think, I'm not a football fan, but I know that Tom Brady just retired, right? And if you read his retirement message that he put out there, he said, you know, something about, I'm paraphrasing, but like, you know, when you're in it, you don't think about it coming to an end. It just does. Let's just be clear. I'm not endorsing Tom Brady, the Buccaneers, or the Patriots. Okay. Cause I don't care. I'm not a football fan. I'm a hockey fan, but I just think that message was so relevant to the veteran who's in there and serving, and they're not really thinking about what's next. And then they find themselves in the next, and it's like, well, crap, now what?
It can hit you like a sledgehammer in the chest. That's one reason why I'm out here, you know, publishing my take on things and the struggles I went through. And maybe this is that purpose that I'm looking for to help out as many transitioning service members as I can. So I can kind of coach, because everybody's focused on the job, getting the job. You're going to get a job. It's going to happen for you. The other things are the things that you need to really be worrying about: your mental health, your physical health, how you're assimilating, and influences around you, making sure that positive. And those are, I put those before the job 100% if I was laying out a curriculum.
And I think that, you know, just the words that you've shared today, whether it's your 10 lessons or all the things that you've said, I think that's going to make an impact too. So the people that listen to this, whether, you know, they hear it today or a year from today, I know it's going to make an impact. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing kind of the lessons that you learned the hard way and just how they've impacted you.
Well, no, I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully I'll publish the next 10 and I'll probably give it a year, think through some things, and then come out with my next 10. So it'll be 20 rules.
Sounds good. We'll come back when you get them published, okay?
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Our goal is to get in the ear of as many active duty service members as possible. So please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and join us on our LinkedIn and Facebook communities to tell us what lesson you learned today.